diving to the deck of the 100-foot craft. When his weapon ran dry, Court dropped it and ran to the port side of the yacht. He knew the bright flash of the gun would have attracted attention, and he needed to get as far away from the bow as possible. He made it back to the stairs to the lower decks just as the machine guns on the yacht again began belching hot steel. On the stairs, he saw his boat was sinking now, leaning to the port side, although its forward propulsion still pulled to starboard. Court returned to the lower saloon and dropped to his hands and knees. It was below the waterline and therefore mostly safe from direct gunfire. He found Zack lying in the same place. His bare chest was covered in the ersatz bandages and a thick sheen of sweat. His eyes were open and blinking.
"Fucking Navy," Zack said as Court crawled up next to him.
A passing sweep from the machine gun sent splinters and glass and seawater throughout the saloon, just above their heads. Seconds later, the engine stopped, and the Fatima began to drift. But the gunfire continued. Court had to scream to be heard.
"We're going up on deck! Don't forget the sunscreen! We're sinking! We're going to have to go over the port side! Maybe we can wait a while, transmit the distress on the VHF when they leave!"
"Not gonna work. We're nowhere near international waters. The Sudanese will hear the distress, come back, and finish the job."
"I'm not going to sink that Navy boat. I don't have any other alternative."
Zack laid his head back flat.
"Do what you gotta do, bro. I'm staying right here."
The machine gun fire stopped abruptly. Court looked around. He noticed the water bottle he'd left on the floor earlier had rolled to the port side. Within seconds, other items in the room began to slide on the mirror-like finish of the deck.
"We're dead in the water," Court said. "The engine room must be filling up. But why aren't they shooting?"
Zack said nothing.
"I'll be right back."
Court climbed the stairs on his hands and knees. The yacht was sinking incredibly quickly. Already, it leaned to port at a 10-degree angle. On the deck, he laid flat, so he was concealed to the starboard side by the list to port. He crawled to the railing and peered over carefully, looking for the gunboat. The Navy vessel was moving out of the area, away from the yacht, and Court could not imagine why. Quickly, he looked into the sky, worried about a fighter plane with a bomb or some other attack that would necessitate the patrol craft hauling ass. But the starry skies were clear. He was about to turn to slide back to the companionway when he noticed it, just above the waterline, just below his position at the railing. In the darkness, it glistened and hung there like a big wet tumor on the hull of the Fatima. It was attached to the hull with cables and suction cups and had been below the waterline before the yacht began listing hard to the opposite side. Cigar shape, black as onyx, and 20 feet long, an enclosed prop and rudder at the rear, and a clear plastic canopy on the top. A mini submarine. Court shook his head in disbelief and mumbled with a little smile,
"Zack, you rat bastard."
Court realized now why the boat had pulled so hard to starboard at speed. Hightower had neglected to mention it because his primary mission was to kill the Gray Man. His secondary mission would be to save his own life. Court had an incredible respect for Sierra One's mission focus, even if it did piss him off. Court looked back to the Sudanese patrol boat and realized they must have seen it too, but apparently they had taken it for a large torpedo and decided to back off lest one of their machine gun rounds set it off. The Gray Man turned away, slid down the sharply angled deck to the companionway, and returned to the saloon. Zack was still on his back.
"Would it have killed you to tell me about the sub?"
"I was hoping it would kill you if I didn't."
"You going to tell me how to drive it? You've never piloted a mini-sub?"
"Who the fuck has piloted a mini-sub?"
Zack smiled and said nothing.
"Don't suppose there is an instruction manual lying around anywhere?"
No response.
"I feel like ripping that tube out right now, Zack."
No response.
"God, when I'm done saving you, I swear I'm going to kill you."
Court knelt and lifted Zack onto his wounded shoulder. He screamed in pain. Zack screamed as well from the agony of being hefted by his bandaged right arm, but Gentry did nothing to make his patient feel better. Chapter 51. Court pulled the small canopy shut from the difficult action of the closing mechanism and the absence of a good handhold on the inside of the plexiglass. He got the impression there was some sort of a button or knob that would cause an automatic shut and seal, but Cort couldn't even see the dials and gauges in front of him in the dark, so yanking it tight with his fingertips would just have to do. He'd managed to get Hightower inside without one iota of assistance from him. By the time they'd made it back on deck, it was listing at 25 degrees. Every bit of strength in Cort's good arm was put to use sliding Zack up to the railing and over the side. Skittering together down the wet hull of the sub, the satellite phone popped out of Gentry's pocket and bounced off into the ocean. Cort found a latch on the outside of the canopy and popped it open. He struggled to get Hightower's dead weight slid into the rear recumbent position. Cort buckled him in like a child in a car seat and scooted down into the front. Exhausted, once enclosed in the small cockpit, he took a few seconds to recover. Then he called back to his unwilling passenger.
Come on, buddy, give me a hint. What do I do?
I'd love to help, bro, but my orders are to terminate you. This is kind of a roundabout way to achieve my objective, but...
His voice had grown much weaker after the strain of the movement, even if his attitude remained in full effect.
Fuck your orders. Let's go for a ride.
Zack did not reply. Cort went back to feeling around at the controls. A sudden, loud screech filled the air, and a shell landed in the water 25 yards short of the sub. The small craft shuddered, and foamy water splashed on the plexiglass like a mini hurricane was passing overhead.
I guess their smoke break is over, muttered Hightower from the back seat.
Shit!
Cort began fingering all the dials in front of him, found nothing that felt right to flip or twist or punch. He wanted to activate everything. It might still come to that, but he was scared to do so. He really had no idea what he was getting himself into, only that the alternative was to sit on a sinking ship and dodge high-explosive shells from the patrol boat's deck gun. He ran his fingers faster on the controls, feeling for some sort of power button, which he imagined to be larger and more pronounced than what his fingertips had so far come across in the darkness. His hands next moved to either side of him, to the outside of the vinyl armrests along the walls. On the left side, his hand wrapped around a simple lever with a ball extending 3 inches horizontal from the wall. It was in the up position. With nothing else feeling right, he pulled the lever. Immediately, the front of the sub disengaged from the cable attached to the suction cup on the hull of the yacht. The nose dropped towards the water, and Gentry slammed forward into the cockpit controls. He had neglected to fasten himself in the seat harness, as he had Hightower behind him. He screamed in pain. With all his might, he leaned back, felt above him for a lever aft of the one he pulled, and he found it and yanked it down. The rear cable disengaged, and the midget sub slid off the angled side of the Fatima and plunged 5 feet down to the black water, nose first. Upon hitting the sea, the craft righted itself for a moment, and Cort used the time to fumble back into his cockpit chair. It was difficult to do, but he managed, had only just snapped the clasp when he felt the weight of gravity on his right side. The water around the plexiglass's bubble was an opaque dark green, so Gentry waited for the sub to come back up to the surface so he could get his bearings. For 5 seconds he waited to resurface, and all the while he felt the pull harder and harder to the right, as if the sub was somehow beginning to roll. At 10 seconds he realized it was rolling, but the pull to the right seemed to stop. The sub was still submerged. He pulled the small folding knife from his pocket, held it in his lap, and let it go. The knife flew upwards, just missing his chin and nose, before bouncing on the plastic canopy and sliding forward. Cort realized then that they were inverted, and they were sinking.
Zack! Zack!
Gentry's ears popped, and he fought a wave of panic. He had no situational awareness whatsoever now, completely entombed as he was in a dead craft in dark water. Hightower did not reply. Above him, he heard a shell hit the yacht, a two-stage explosion, the first being the warhead and the second, undoubtedly, the fuel tanks. A shockwave buffeted the bottom of the sub. Gentry could wait no more. His hands reached out in front of him. His right index finger found a button, an arbitrary button, as there were dozens, and he could not even see what color they were, much less any writing on them. Fuck it. He pressed down. Nothing. His ears popped again, and a sustained pressure entered his head. He had no idea how deep the water was here, but he neither wanted to keep dropping nor hit the bottom, especially canopy first. He reached for the next button, pushed it, then a third, then a fourth. He wondered if he was releasing fuel or opening a cargo door or triggering a self-destruction sequence. Court did not know the first goddamn thing about submarines. He pressed a fifth button, and immediately warm infrared lighting illuminated the cabin. His head was killing him, and nausea ripped through his body from his intestines to the back of his neck. With the new light, he quickly scanned dozens of choices, looking for anything to turn on. His finger stopped at a button labeled HUD, and he pressed it without hesitation. The laser heads-up display came online, projecting all sorts of data on the windscreen in front of him. Speed and current depth increased by the second. An artificial horizon turned slowly clockwise, and a compass heading revolved steadily around the dial. He wanted situational awareness, and he got it. Now, after the onboard computer told him that he was corkscrewing down to his death, he realized that he really didn't want that info after all. The pain in his head worsened. He vomited water and bile. Some of it spewed through his nose and followed gravity's path, running into his eyes. He smeared away the burn with his sweaty arm, put his hand on the joystick on his right, and tried to right the craft, but it had no effect whatsoever. He pushed the lever that he took for a throttle with his left hand. Again, nothing doing. He stomped his bare left and right feet down, kicking out for rudder pedals that were not there. The submarine passed 60 feet. Court fought another wave of nausea and a further increase in panic. Then he stopped playing with the controls, brought his hands into his lap. "Zack, you awake?" Court's voice was calm now, no sign of panic or threat to the other man in the doomed submarine.
"Yeah, just enjoying the ride, bro."
Zack's voice was incredibly weak. He'd likely be dead soon, Court realized, no matter what happened to Court. Still, Gentry knew Zack well. He was not as calm as he pretended to be. Zack Hightower didn't want to die either.
"I can't make this thing work."
Gentry pulled his Glock 19 and held it up in the red light for his rear passenger to see.
"But I can make this thing work." "Really? You're threatening to shoot me? That's all you got, dude? Pretty fucking lame."
Court ignored him. He said, "I've trained without oxygen at depths of 130 feet. If I blow this hatch in the next minute, flood the sub, and make it to the surface, I figure I can find some floating debris from the yacht to grab onto. With a little luck, I should make it back to shore by nightfall."
"And then what?"
"I make it out of the Sudan."
"Right, that's gonna happen."
Court paused, then said, "I'm the goddamn gray man, remember? I'll get it done." All quiet in the rear seat now.
"But that's one ride I can't take you along on. You understand, don't you, bro?"
He mimicked Sierra One. Again, Zack did not respond. Court took that as a good sign. Hightower was never at a loss for words.
"So I'll live and you'll die, which means you fucked up. If you would have helped me with the sub, we both could have made it, meaning you could have lived to kill me another day. Ultimate mission success by temporary delay of mission resolution. Even Denny Carmichael would agree that that is a valid strategy for a good soldier like you to take. You just aren't smart enough to know a good deal when you see it."
Still, nothing from behind.
"I'm sure there's a better way to pop this hatch, but the only control I know how to work in this goddamn tub is the trigger of this gun. Wish I could leave the Glock behind for you to shoot yourself before you drown, but it may come in handy on shore."
Zack remained silent. Court hoped he was thinking and hadn't just fallen asleep. Gentry's head was killing him. His sinuses felt like they would burst open any second with the pressure and the acidic puke in his nose.
"Passing 110 feet.
Court began filling his lungs with air, a rapid deep breathing to increase lung capacity. In between breaths, he said,
"It was a pleasure serving under you most of the time, Zack. I'll send a letter to Langley and tell them you went down with the ship."
A few more deep breaths. Court pushed the barrel of the gun to the plexiglass's canopy, ducked down away from it. Zack coughed weakly.
"Fuck," thought Court. "He's not going for it." "See ya,"
Gentry said, stalling an instant more, and then he moved his finger to the trigger and sucked in a full deep breath of the cabin air.
"Here we go. Down by your right knee. Dial that says BAL. Turn it all the way to the left to neutralize the ballast. Next to that is a square button that says PROCON. That's propulsion control. Push it now."
Zack's voice was weak, but the word sure as hell came out fast. Gentry lowered the gun, found the dial and turned it, then found the button and pushed it. Immediately, a loud metallic noise filled his aching head. A 2D computer rendering of the submarine appeared on the HUD. It started as a cigar-shaped image, but when the metal noise stopped, the image had wings and tail fins and looked like a single-engine fighter plane.
Give it some thrust, just a touch.
Cort tipped the throttle, and he felt a slight engine rumble and sensed gentle forward movement. A HUD reading that had been zero slowly climbed from 5% to 10% to 20% as he pushed the throttle a bit more.
Now, use the joystick to level her out. It's fly-by-wire. Pitch, yaw, roll, all controlled by the joystick. Kind of like an airplane.
Zack coughed.
You crashed a plane once, didn't you?
Crash landed, Cork clarified. He'd gone from near post-panic resignation of his imminent death to near jubilant euphoria at his high prospects for survival, all in the last 30 seconds.
That was in Kiev, wasn't it?
Tanzania, Zack. You were there.
But again in Kiev. You crashed there too, didn't you?
No comment. Quickly, he had the descent under control, and then the machine leveled out. A few seconds more, and he had the compass heading pointing due east.
Headlights,
instructed Zack from behind.
Where? Have you ever been in a car, dumbass? Same place.
Cort reached to the left in front of him, and yes, the switch felt just like it did in most wheeled vehicles he'd driven. He flipped it on and shouted in shock.
Oh, shit!
The sub moved quickly along the sandy ocean floor, which was not more than 10 feet below. Cort began hyperventilating slightly. He pulled back on the joystick and pushed the throttle forward to 40%.
Okay, now, a four-position dial on your left, about 11 o'clock.
With the dim red lights, it was hard to find, but Cort got his fingers around it.
Turn it all the way. Oxygen scrubbers. We're breathing each other's carbon dioxide at the moment. This will clean the air.
Roger that. After Zack's tired voice instructed Cort through turning on the O2 system and activating the sub's laser collision avoidance feelers, Cort piloted the sub to the east for another minute, getting the feel of the craft. Once confident he had the hang of it, he called back to Hightower again.
How am I doing? You suck. You can't drive cars for shit. You can't fly planes for shit. You'll probably steer this thing up a whale's ass in a minute.
Cort could hear the relief secreted in the injured man's admonitions. 2 hours later, Cort felt certain they were well out in international waters. He could hear soft moaning and an occasional wheeze from the man behind him. Zack babbled incoherently at one point. Gentry knew Hightower could still die from his wound or from an infection, even if he made it to top-flight medical care in the next hours. Sir Donald would have to come through big time to rescue them. The irony was not lost on the gray man. He'd saved Sir Donald a few months earlier, told himself he'd never trust him again, and now the portly knight was Cort's very last hope. The sub finally surfaced at 8:15 in the morning. The sun was well up now, straight off the bow of the little vessel. Gentry used it to orient himself as the HUD was difficult to read with the bright daylight penetrating the cockpit. Cort activated the FM beacon and waited. They bobbed up and down on the open sea. A little after 10, he saw the ship. It was a huge tanker, and as it loomed above the submarine, loomed above Gentry's head right at the waterline, it seemed as high as a skyscraper and menacing with its jet-black hull. The ship took nearly a half hour from its first sight to the point at which a ladder was lowered to the sub and Cort popped his canopy. He called out for help, and two men came down on separate ladders, secured Hightower in a harness, and had him lifted 3 stories up to the railing. Cort climbed up the ladder under his own power, though his shoulder burned with the strain, and he vomited in the heat as the huge ship rose and fell with him hanging on alongside. He'd nearly made it to the top when he passed the big letters on the port side bow. He had to lean back to read the name of the craft that rescued him. Laurent Group Cherbourg. Perfect, he said. Cort had had dealings with Laurent Group, the huge multinational corporation that had tried to kill him the previous year. He never thought he'd willingly climb aboard one of their vessels, but, again, desperate times called for desperate measures. Cort continued up the ladder to the railing and was pulled over the side by a crew of Indonesians. Zack was laid out on a stretcher and rushed hurriedly away. Cort himself fell to the deck, was lifted by his arms and legs, and then more dragged than carried into a cool hallway in the superstructure of the ship. Within minutes, he asked for morphine. A syringe appeared, and shortly thereafter, he was out. When he awoke, he'd already been transferred to another boat, a tall sailing ship owned by a Welsh media tycoon and, as it turned out, a friend of Sir Donald. Court asked about the condition of the man brought aboard the tanker with him, but the crew of this new vessel had no information. 4 days later, they made port in Alexandria, and Court Gentry slipped ashore and away. The crew of the sailing ship never saw him leave. They just awoke one morning and found him gone. Epilogue. Of all the 80 nations around the globe to which Rosa Barone Export sold arms, IL-76 senior pilot Gennady Orlov most enjoyed his layovers in Venezuela. It was not because of Caracas's nightlife, which had taken a hit with the austere communist demagoguery that President Hugo Chavez had advanced in the past few years. And it was not because of the natural, rugged beauty of the country, as Gennady rarely had more than 1 day until his turnaround flight back to Russia, and therefore insufficient time to